Today, we're in conversation with Clive Potter, Global Head, Consumer Client Coverage, Standard Bank Corporate and Investment Banking, about the Retail 2.0 webinar, which examined the impact that COVID-19 has had on the retail sector in South Africa. The webinar featured leading African retailer Massmart, South African precinct-focused retail-centered real estate investment trust Liberty 2 Degrees, and leading retailer with a portfolio of 30 leading retail brands and over 4,000 outlets in 32 countries on 5 continents, the Fashini Group.
Hello everyone. Welcome to an update on our Retail 2.0 webinar that Standard Bank hosted a week or so ago. On the webinar, we had the CEO of TFG, Anthony Tunstrom. We had the CEO of Liberty 2 Degrees. We had the executive for Omnichannel, Laza Karapanagiotidis from Massmart, the Omnichannel executive, as well as Kayleen Brown, our head of retail equity research within Standard Bank Group Securities. So a really insightful panel. And ultimately, the thematic of the session was to try and get a bead through COVID and through the pandemic as to where some of the retail trends were going and the feeling as to where South African retail and Africa retail more broadly was likely to play out over the next, call it 3 to 5 years. And some fascinating insights provided from our panelists and guest speakers through the day or through the hour and a half that we had with them. Maybe some key comments coming out. We raised the question, started out with Anthony, as to where he saw Omnichannel going, or at least e-commerce going from a TFG perspective. And he was quite clear. For them, retail isn't about bricks and mortar. It is all about Omnichannel. It isn't just about e-commerce. It is about providing the consumer with an Omnichannel experience. His view was that there are very few global trends that don't filter into the rest of the world. And we're seeing it play out in South Africa. We've seen it play out in Africa, even in the telecom space, where the technology changes skip generations from 2G to 3G to 5G. Africa ultimately is a space that takes these trends on and accelerates through the change. So we anticipate the e-commerce trend being here to stay, and Anthony was very, very clear. He said if you wanted to be in e-commerce, you had to anticipate that e-commerce was here to stay and it was going to grow at an accelerated pace. They were 1% a couple of years ago, they were 2% last year, they're at 5% today, and his view is that that'll grow to 10 to 15 to 20%. So it is here to stay, it is a reality of the customer shopping experience and what they want. And if you want to be a successful retailer, you have to offer an omnichannel experience, including e-commerce, that ultimately provides what the customer wants. Interestingly, his view when asked the question whether or not the omnichannel or e-commerce was a profitable channel for them, he felt that they would be profitable in the e-commerce offering by the end of the year. One can challenge how that is. If you look at some of the e-commerce offerings globally, difficult for the retailers to generate a unit profit. But he was very clear that they could generate unit profits in e-commerce. Proof will be in the eating and the telling of the story over the next couple of years. But I have faith in Anthony. He's been at it for a long time. And we look forward to seeing how the TFG e-commerce strategy grows and the omnichannel experience starts to really become part of who they are as a retailer. He also made the point around who their customer was. He was asked the question, is it a one-size-fits-all? How do you appeal to the customer base? His feeling was that the back end of e-commerce is a one-size-fits-all, how you ultimately pack and pick and deliver. But the front end is definitely not a one-size-fits-all experience. His view that there was a wrong perception that it was only youngsters that shop online. They have a very, very big customer base that sits in that 35 to 40, 40 to 45, 50 and 50 plus bucket that is becoming increasingly e-commerce orientated and shops predominantly online. So it wasn't only an online Generation Z or millennial experience from an e-commerce perspective, and that their offering had to speak to the broad segment of consumer across all age brackets. One of the questions raised of him was personalization. We see the trend globally on some of the big brands like Nike, Adidas, with this athleather streetwear where there's a lot of personalization for the customer. They can come in, ultimately build their own shoe, build their own piece of clothing. He was asked the question whether that was relevant to the consumer. Yeah, athleisure has been a phenomenal growth category for them and for the sector overall. And his feeling was that personalization is not going to move the needle here. They've got thousands and thousands of SKU items. And his feeling was that it's the offering that provides the personalization. It's not the ability to walk into a store and create a shoe that's really going to provide the differentiation in South Africa and Africa at large. So interesting take. Time will tell. Ultimately, the consumer demands certain things. And if the segment's big enough and it makes sense, who knows, maybe that's where they go and start to track the likes of a Nike and an Adidas, etc., or Puma. But for now, his view was that a deep offering, and that retailers who have a deep offering can offer that personalization through product. There was a lot to take in from an e-commerce perspective. One could get the sense that the mall is dead, or at least the concept of the mall is dead. Long live the mall, so to speak. But feedback from Amelia Beattie was that that's not the case. If one goes to Sandton City, for instance, on a Saturday, and I've been there the last couple of weekends, just doing my own research for the podcast, it looks like a typically busy Saturday pre-COVID. So people are definitely trending back to the malls. And her view was that you're starting to see, 95% plus footfall coming back into the malls. Sure, at the height of COVID and the pandemic in SA, people were staying away from restaurants, staying away from shopping, but definitely seeing people trending back. Ultimately, shopping is lifestyle. Leisure is shopping in South Africa, so to speak. Leisure time is shopping time. So the concept of the mall being dead is an anathema, and it isn't ultimately the trend that we believe to play out going forward. Malls are here to stay. Perhaps the growth and acceleration in mall space will slow over time. But in terms of the malls and the super regionals and some of those iconic properties that we all trend towards or tend to go to over the weekends, whether it's Hyde Park or Sandton City or Nelson Mandela Square, those malls will ultimately still attract the footfall. And Amelia made the point that they're doing a lot in the space to attract the customer back. They're offering their own digital personalization experiences. When you come in, if you've got your mobile device, how you engage with a mall, so to speak, digitally, they're starting to look at those trends. Click and collect areas or bays where you can come and collect goods. So trying to provide that, I guess, that back end or last mile service for retailers in terms of their own omni-channel strategy. So click and collect, etc. So her view was that they are going out of their way, and it's really part of their core strategy to make sure that they support retailers and they ultimately support a unique shopping experience for customers as they come into their big malls. We also raised the point around urbanization, maybe the exodus of consumers away from the super regionals into some of the more rural areas or non-super regionals, the neighborhood mall type areas. And the feeling was definitely it's been a growth area. Those malls have seen a lot of footfall, or at least those areas have seen a lot of footfall and a lot of spend. A lot of spend patterns in the retailers are showing double-digit growth in some of those areas. And she confirmed it. They have really spoken to the pandemic and offered some of those, or at least appealed to some of those consumers who felt going into the superstores or super regionals wasn't the space to go, and have favored the neighborhood malls. Quick, easy, in and out, a bit more safe. So those have shown good growth. Long term, I suspect those trends will remain. But ultimately, as things return to normal, and there's a view that things will return to normal, people will go back to work, will not work from home 100%. There'll be maybe some hybrid model, and you'll start to see people coming back into the malls and supporting the footfall and the traffic into those centers. So she was very confident around where the malls are going, and confident that that the mall strategy is here to stay for the long term. Maybe her parting comment, and it was one that resonated, is that the property owners now more than ever and the retailers are ultimately joined at the hip. The success of the retailer is born out in the success of the property owner, or at least the landlords, and together they need to find common ground to make it work, to make the economics work, whether it's fixed rentals, you know, revenue-based rentals, how you create interesting spaces for the consumer to come back into the malls. Together they had to find a way to make it work. Even a retail or e-commerce growing to 20% of sales, that still leaves 80% destined for the malls, and hence it is the bulk. It's where the majority of the profit centers lie, and ultimately the retailer and the property owners need to come together to make it work, and we're seeing it play out. You've seen a lot of lease rental revisions, negotiations across the board, and we suspect that, well, things have perhaps set at a low level, both in terms of retail sales and lease costs. Ultimately, they've come together to make sure that that there's a viable proposition for both parties concerned. So, you know, the feeling was maybe they would be at loggerheads on the call. Definitely not the case. They are absolutely joined together in making it work for both parties, and ultimately ensuring the safety and the shopping experience of the consumers by and large. We then had a very interesting conversation with Lazo on some of the digital channels, not necessarily from a Massmart perspective, but just more generally. You know, Massmart forms part of the Walmart group. Walmart's got a huge push into the e-commerce space globally, and very specifically in the US. Raised the question with him around the super apps and how he sees those playing out. Obviously, big developments on those. In the US, the likes of Amazon, the likes of WeChat in the East, and you know, very interesting space. We don't necessarily have that type of super app within the confines of South Africa or Africa. His view is that it's still too early to tell, but clearly the evolution into app-based shopping is growing, and ultimately it's a space that everyone is looking at, they themselves. So we heard it from Anthony, we heard it from Amelia. It's definitely a space of interest, and one that that they are looking aggressively at from a Massmart perspective. And time will tell as to how it plays out. The concept of a super apps versus brand loyalty, how you appeal to the customer, some really interesting conversations with Lazo. And no real concrete answers. No one has a concrete answer other than to say that, again, this is a massive trend in the West and the East, and it is likely to play out in how people shop in South Africa and Africa by and large, especially as you start to see the penetration of data, easy access, data costs, or at least cost of data coming down, people with smartphones, not just feature phones, and you'll start to see the shoppers accelerating their take on of some of these apps that offer everything. You know, the construct around convergence is very real in retail today. We raised the point that banks and retailers alike are actually converging. If you look at your average retailer, grocery retailer, or even a clothing retailer in South Africa, they're offering services that banks offer. Maybe they can't take deposits because that's regulated, but in terms of value-added services, offering customers cash at till, etc., you know, retailers are starting to take on some of the characteristics of banks, and likewise, banks are starting to take on the characteristics of retailers, creating these ecosystems and platforms where bank customers can ultimately purchase things on bank platforms. So there's a huge convergence in the space. Significant convergence around ecosystems and the shared value proposition amongst consumers, retailers, banks, etc. And Lazo was very frank. You know, everyone's got to look at the space. It's ultimately about the consumer being creating ecosystems around your consumer base or customer base and offering them as much as you can through your own platform, and then partnering with the right individuals to create that platform and that shopping experience. So it isn't only about owning your own platform or owning end to end. It's about having the right partners on your platform and creating the right space and ecosystem for customers. We raised the comment with him around bricks and mortar as well. And he was very clear, you know, bricks and mortar will not disappear. It is the predominant channel for most retailing in South Africa and Africa by and large. Although if you get out of SA and you move into the rest of Africa, formal retail is still very underpenetrated. It is predominantly informal retail in those markets. So the thought of scrapping bricks and mortar, definitely not the case, but it is about leveraging your asset infrastructure, your bricks and mortar infrastructure, whether it's click and collect or unique shopping experiences, more within malls or shops in shops, that one needs to look at. Obviously, it was protective of some of the IP that Massmart has and what they're looking to do, but very, very clear that they will look to leverage their fixed infrastructure, their bricks and mortar infrastructure, to deliver a shopping experience to the consumer. We raised the question on unit economics. Anthony's view was that they were able to, they believe they will generate unit economics or positive unit economics in e-commerce over the coming year. Lazo's view was that the sale is easy, it's the fulfillment piece that is very hard, that last mile that makes or breaks e-commerce. And a view that, you know, they are looking at ways to minimize the costs and make the e-commerce model work. Clearly the final mile is a bit hit and miss in terms of service delivery and how you ultimately execute, and a lot of focus and time is being spent in that arena. We raised the question around the informal market and whether it's an area that ultimately can be big. If you think about it, informal retail in Africa is around, call it $250 to $300 billion market for us across Africa, or sub-Saharan Africa. It is a huge space to get right. The question is, can you do proper e-commerce last mile into the informal space or traditional markets, townships, so to speak? As the question mark is still out there, that last mile into those areas, especially where street names, addresses, street numbers, etc., aren't necessarily as rigid or set in stone like some of the other neighborhoods where they deliver to. It is a challenge, but one that everyone's looking at and no doubt will look at aggressively and increasingly over the coming years. It is too big a market to ignore, and you're starting to see some of the retailers push into those areas. The likes of Spar have done exceptionally well there. Mr. Price has opened up their first container in the informal space. I know Anthony mentioned they're looking at how to deliver and fulfill into that arena. So yeah, some interesting points and comments from Lazo in that space. We raised the question with him on Africa as well, rest of Africa, so to speak. And the feeling is that the demand is there, the awareness is there on e-commerce, but the ecosystems and the infrastructure still not developed to ultimately create a viable, scalable market for them just yet. They've obviously got a reasonably strong footprint across Africa. It's still predominantly bricks and mortar, but one where they will definitely look to invest in. He raised the point around growing infrastructure through crowdsourcing, aggregator models. This talks to delivery and logistics. So definitely a market that will show huge growth, but it'll be off a very, very low base. So one you can't ignore, but I think the prize perhaps is more in ultimately penetrating into formal retail and leveraging existing footprints and maybe trying to make the model work on e-commerce in South Africa and get the learnings in South Africa. So Kayleen's comment around never wasting a good crisis is absolutely spot on. And if you see some of the winners in the retail space through COVID were those that really had invested in their e-commerce channel. They were really able to ramp up the offering to consumers. And while maybe the profits weren't there, they definitely stole a march on their rivals in terms of hearts and minds and consumer buying. One only has to look at what 60/60 did from a ShopRite perspective. They had, I think it was 9 stores pre-COVID. They rapidly accelerated that to, I think, about 40 and growing unbelievably well through the crisis. Anyone on that call that we had or the retail webinar, if you had to put it by show of hands or on the chat, most of the people on that call would have used 60/60. I'd use 60/60 increasingly. So I think they really showed that even a mass market retailer, although Checkers isn't mass market, it's really got a great offering now, starting to compete and offer services to actually get that buy-in from the consumer. And now you've seen Woolies follow suit with Woolies Dash. You've got Pick and Pay getting into the market in terms of how to deliver that last mile. So people are the retailers are trying to figure out how to ultimately execute on it. But those that had the platforms in place pre-COVID, really did steal a march and were able to really position themselves exceptionally well. So it was a great comment from Kayleen. She also made the point around don't try and Amazon or out Amazon. You know, ultimately, someone like an Amazon has got a great platform. They offer a unique value proposition. Now, we don't have Amazon necessarily here. You can order and it gets delivered into South Africa. But her point was leverage what your core competences are, who your customer is, and don't try and go into a space that you're ultimately going to lose in. So, I know, great point and well noted. She also made the point on value. Definitely a shift to value in the retail space at the moment. Consumers are shopping down, both in terms of grocery as well as clothing. And ultimately, that value space is an important space. Now, it wasn't necessarily about the cheapest item. It's just that consumers are increasingly aware of what value they're getting on an item. And it can be an expensive item, but provided the value is there and the value proposition is there, consumers will pay or buy. So again, it was a valid point raised, trending downwards, but also just being aware of what you're buying. If the wallet is shrinking, people want to make sure that whatever's being put into the basket is worth what's being put into the basket. So some interesting comments from her in the space. And ultimately, you know, from her perspective, there really have been a couple of winners in the space. It's borne out in terms of the numbers, or at least positioning, that product positioning, how they've ultimately articulated the offering to the consumer, and they've done well. That being said, the space is under pressure. The consumer is under pressure. The macro story is weak. The pie is definitely shrinking in terms of available spend. And hence, retailers are having to shift their strategies and redefine how they approach the consumer. So a lot to play for within the space. And maybe some of the closing comments were that retail, you know, continues to be a detail game. Your retail is detail. You're seeing retailers shift their strategies and accelerate their strategies into spaces that perhaps they haven't been in the past. And it's all about making sure that they can offer a competitive offering to their consumer and ultimately an omni-channel experience that allows consumers to determine how and where they want to shop and where they want to collect the items that they do buy. So it was a fascinating session. Hopefully everyone got a lot out of it. I certainly learned a lot, and we look forward to hosting the next session next year and updating the market as to where some of these trends and thematics have landed. So thanks for joining. Thanks for being part of it, and we look forward to sharing more insights with you on the retail space over the coming months. Cheers.
Thank you for listening. That was Clive Potter, Global Head, Consumer Client Coverage, Standard Bank Corporate and Investment Banking, discussing the Retail 2.0 virtual webinar hosted by the bank.